Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It's been a pretty happy time for us Liverpool fans, and as we eagerly look forward to the Europa League this week, the Indian crew of Anfield Index comes together once again to discuss players, finances, and even share their personal experience of watching a very recent game at Anfield. Welcome to another episode of the Indian AI Podcast. So guys, before we get right into it, we're smack in the middle of two Europa League draws. I know right now we're also thinking about the Indian game that's going on, the T20 World Cup, and we're not doing very well. But let's focus all our energies on Liverpool tonight. And Sri, starting with you, how are you feeling tonight about Liverpool and the upcoming Europa League draw?
I think what's most important is how you were feeling last week, because you have been humble enough to not brag about that you were the one who were at Anfield for the United game. So I think it is ideal that you should be kicking this off.
Yeah, Sri, you know, I have found it so difficult to talk about this experience of mine because I can A, never find the right words, and B, it still feels like it was a dream. So there are times when I remember the morning after the game, when I was in the bus on my way back to London from Liverpool, I woke up in the bus and I had to go back to the photographs and the videos that I took at the game to like pinch myself. And yes, I was there at Anfield that night. It was electric, probably one of the best moments of my life, for sure. I'm never going to forget this game ever. I feel so lucky that more than anything else, I feel so lucky that I got to see a Jurgen Klopp team play and not a Brendan Rodgers team. And this, in fact, I didn't even realize this till, of course, we were sitting in the car and heading towards the coach station with Nina and Gags. And Nina mentioned it to me and she said, "You're so lucky, Darsh, you got to see a Jurgen Klopp team play." And I was like, yes, I'm super lucky. So what happened was I was supposed to first go for the Chelsea game that was scheduled that weekend. And that was something that I had planned, I think, almost 3 weeks before, 3 to 4 weeks in advance, booked my tickets, everything to the UK based around that game. And finally, a week after I booked the tickets, I was having a conversation with Gags and he broke the news to me that that game is postponed. So obviously I bawled all night. I was like, okay, it's not meant to be. This is not happening. So I just have to push this to another time. And as I reached closer to the week that I was supposed to travel to UK, the Europa League fixtures got announced and we were playing Manchester United the week I was supposed to be in London. And Neil, actually, I need to thank you for this because you were the first person who mentioned it on our WhatsApp group. And it's because of you that the whole discussion started after that. And I was able to like book tickets and everything. So thank you so much, because if you hadn't mentioned, I probably wouldn't have made it in time for booking tickets. And of course, Gags and Nina made the booking of tickets possible for me. And the best thing about the whole experience was that in most cases, I would have thought that, you know, I would have probably watched a Liverpool game alone, because I don't have friends in Liverpool or in UK as such to really come and watch the game with me. But I was so lucky because I got to watch the game with Nina and Gags, meeting them for the first time. Like I was discussing with Nina earlier, you know, we know each other's voices in and out. We've been talking to each other for like a year, and it was finally the moment arrived when we could put those voices to actual faces and personalities. And it was simply amazing. So apart from the whole Liverpool factor, just the fact that I was able to watch this game with Gags and Nina was on a different level altogether. It was just absolutely brilliant. And I must say, Gags is super fun to watch a game with. Like, he screams and shouts and he's always singing and always chanting and he just keeps jumping up and down and screaming at the players. It's too much fun. And Nina is Nina's like all analytical. She's analyzing what the players are doing and who's not playing well and who's doing well. And she's always passing comments. So it was just absolutely fantastic overall. And of course, the atmosphere. So obviously that was my first experience at the games. So I didn't really know how it feels to be at Anfield and how the atmosphere is in real, you know, in reality, how it is. But both Nina and Yax told me that that night, Anfield had just erupted. It was electric as hell. It hadn't been so in a while, it seems, apparently. So again, I feel really lucky because the fans were just singing all the time. There were hardly any moments of lull or moments of silence. And to add to the fact that we were playing pretty well. So, you know, it was just constant chattering and constant singing. The feeling of singing You'll Never Walk Alone for the first time at Anfield, oh my God, that was something else altogether. And of course, both Neil and Shri, both of you guys have experienced it as well. So you know exactly what I'm talking about. Goosebumps and chills and shivers and happiness and excitement. And oh my God, everything put into one. Just, it's so difficult to put that into the right words, honestly. But the thing is, I wanted to shoot the whole stadium singing the anthem. At the same time, I wanted to hold my scarf. So I was kind of stuck between the two, trying to do both. But it was chaotic, but it was simply amazing. Like even right now, I've got goosebumps because that's something every Liverpool fan, you know, at some point wants to experience at some point in his life. And the thing that stands out over here is even when Shree went and even when Neil went, you know, the thing that we talked about was how massive a deal it is for an international fan to come to Liverpool and watch a game at Anfield, because it involves hours and hours of travel and so much of pre-planning, so much of money and finances that go into watching a game. That is why the moment is so special, and not many people really understand the magnitude of it. So it's one of those moments where you need to step back and just look at everything that's happening around you to really feel it, to really experience it, which is what, you know, Nina asked me while we were walking towards the stadium. I was really quiet because I was just looking around at the fans and I was just looking at everything happening around me because it was a surreal experience. And she asked me, Darsh, you know, are you quiet because you're just soaking in everything? And I was like, yeah, Nina, that's exactly what I'm doing. So it still feels like a dream, guys. I close my eyes and the first thing that comes to my head is the stadium and the sea of red around it. So I think overall it was just, I hit jackpot with this game because it was a Liverpool-Manchester United game, our fiercest rivals, and on the bigger stage, not the English League, but on the European stage. So experienced a European night at Anfield, a Jurgen Klopp team, a clean sheet. And we played really well with two goals. Got to see Firmino score. So, yeah, best moment so far.
Darsh, you know the best part about what of the pictures that you sent to us was the video of Gags just bobbing up and down. That was hilarious. I was laughing my ass through that.
Yeah, it was super funny because he was just all over the place, like jumping up and down. When I took that video, I think that was after the first goal or the. I think it was after the first goal and the whole stadium erupted and I just happened to click the video and I didn't even realize that Yags was in it bobbing up and down. And later when I looked at the video, we could see his head like going up and down. Yeah, it was crazy. It was, yeah.
Gags would be the perfect DM for us all over the place.
I watched the video like thrice and I kept looking at Nina and Gags. It was really funny.
But Darsh, you should also talk about the famous celebrity you met, the super sub himself.
Oh, yeah, I completely see. There were so many things in my head. Yeah. So Nina Gags and myself had the opportunity to meet David Fecklow. And he spent a lot of time with us basically talking about what he expects from the team and what he thinks of Manchester United in general and of Manchester, the city as a whole. And he was basically walking. So we were at the stand-on. And so as part of the tickets, you have a pre-game plan, which you get on those tickets, a hospitality ticket. So it was in the higher section of the stand-on. And he was walking around the tables, talking to all the fans and, you know, just generally getting a feel of everything. He was really well dressed in a suit and tie, looking really, really elegant and, you know, just spending time with everyone. And he spent a lot of time with us, basically talking to Nina, I have to say that. But yeah, it was good. I mean, that was a great way to start the whole, you know, the whole experience. Right. So that was my experience. Again, not really the right words because I cannot find the right words to describe it, but just a beautiful, beautiful experience overall. And I hope all of you, all of us on the pod get a chance to experience that. DJ and Meghna, come on, plan your trips. This is the time. This is the Jürgen Klopp period.
Yep. Have to watch a match under Klopp. Yep.
If at least three of us go together, or like at least two of us would go together, it'd be like a lot of fun.
Yeah. When I and Neil met recently, we were planning to go next year. We were like, you know, discussing we can do this, we can do that, we can go this time. And yeah, we're making a plan. Hopefully sometime it should work.
Yeah.
Right. Hopefully we can make that happen. It's going to be very difficult, but if we plan it out, maybe it's a possibility. Never say die. We learned that from Klopp. Never say no.
We all met in Bangalore, so I think going to Anfield shouldn't be a problem, I think.
I like your positivity, but I don't know how realistic that is.
But Anfield's in Liverpool, Neil.
Right, guys. So let's talk about some of our players and how they performed over the past few games. It is, like I said earlier, it's been a really good time for Liverpool fans, for the team, for the manager, because the boys have really been doing a good job on the pitch. Neil, starting with you, is there any particular player you want to talk about who stood out for you in terms of performances, or someone who you think needs to improve to come up to the level that everyone else is on?
Okay, I'd like to talk about not a first team player, not an academy player, but two Indian players who were selected to train at the LFC Kirkby Academy. And this is huge. I think they're the first Indian players to be selected to play for Liverpool, or at least coach for Liverpool, like, you know. So it's a big, big thing for India. See, the LFC Academy was set up in 2014 in India and with the joint venture with DSK, and two players. First, I think he's the golden boy of India. Now his name is Lalian Zula Changte. I'll refer to him as Zola, I mean, because his name is kind of complicated, and the other player's name is Jerry, who has a weird second name, so I'm not going to pronounce it or even try to pronounce it. So these two players have been, you know, selected to take part in a week-long training program at the LFC Kirkby Academy. They're the first players from the academy to earn this. And so basically these two players have been involved with the academy since the last 2 years, since the academy was formed, and they are personally picked by the Liverpool youth coaches in 2014. So talking specifically about Lalian Zula Changte, he was born in 1997 in Mizoram, the extreme northeast of India, where most of, you know, the good players have come from India. You know, Baichang Bhutia, Sunil Chhetri, they've all been part of the northeast. The northeast is known for a very raw talent of Indian football. And I think they have produced the best Indian footballers so far. So both of them, you know, especially Lalian Zula Changte, he's from Mizoram. So I think it's no surprise. And I think in December, he became the youngest ever cap player to play for India in a competitive game. And he also scored. He's the second youngest Indian goal scorer as well. So that's how his name rose to fame. And since then, there's been no looking back. So yeah, I just want to talk about them. And he's personally handpicked by Liverpool's youth coaches. And I saw the game, you know, the game which he played against Nepal. He's only 18 years old. He's born in 1997, and he's younger than most of us. So I think, yeah, maybe younger than, I think, yeah, younger than Meghna as well. So yeah, that's making me feel really old. The other thing is that, you know, so you see how young they are, and they are very raw talent, and, you know, they're very young players who have got the chance to, you know, be part of the training group at the LFC Academy, which is very huge for India. Firstly, I mean, there was a little bit of confusion if they're getting a trial or not, you know, if they've been called up for the trial, but it's not a trial. It is a week-long coaching program at the academy. But it is still a very, very important thing for them, because they learn so much from this, especially how the international players train. You know, the training facility in India at the DSK Academy is very good, but being there, you know, experiencing the whole football culture as such, you know, being part for a week is still huge for them. And personally, I think Lalianzula Changte as since the time I saw him in the Nepal game. I was watching the friendly, the game, and he's so good. You know, his quick feet, he runs, he gets behind to defend, and he basically plays in a front three, you know, maybe center forward or sometimes on the right side as well for the DSK under 19s. So he's a very good player. He's a little, you know, weak. I would say, you know, not very strong because he's still young and, you know, there's no meat inside him. You know, he needs to get stronger, you know, like how Sterling was when he was 16, 17 years old. But I'm sure that can be, you know, worked out. But he's got so much good talent. He's quick with the ball and he runs fast. He's got a few tricks up his sleeves. And he's not afraid to take the shot, especially the goal he scored with his left foot against Nepal was brilliant, brilliant. I think it shows how the young players are developing in the country. And he has a good sense of awareness as well, you know, especially when, if I don't know if you guys have watched any of the goals, but if you see his second goal, he has a sense of awareness of what he's doing. Especially, you know, the header he scored, you know, he's aware of, you know, the keepers in front. So he should try a header and, you know, put the ball over him inside the goal, which was very impressive, I think, for someone that young. So I think this is a good thing for India and the academy as well, because LFC has done a lot of good work at the academy. The coaches, Mike Rice and Dave Rogers, who I've met personally, they've worked really hard. So I think it's a big, big thing for India.
I agree, Neil. It's what stands out the most about the whole thing is how global LFC have become and how much they have spread. The fact that we have an academy in India, the opportunities that it gives our Indian players is brilliant. And again, the platform that the ISL has set also kind of gives it a lot of focus. DJ, coming to you, anything that you need to add to this particular issue?
So I think Neil's covered all the bases there. And I just had to say is that, you know, it's quite, you know, it's really impressive that Liverpool have actually taken these kids and taken them to Liverpool and have them coach and train them for at least a week. I mean, it may just be a week, but I think what is clear is that Liverpool have sent a precedent here and set like really incentivized those kids. And those kids would be looking at these two players and thinking, you know what? It's amazing. These two guys have actually gone there, trained, and they got to meet Coutinho and Milner and then actually underwent that kind of physicality and seen the intensity of training and really see for their own two eyes, like what it takes to make it. So I think that way it's amazing. And though a lot of Premier League clubs and even Real Madrid and Barcelona and whatever have set up academies in and around India, I think Liverpool, this is the first news I've heard of Liverpool actually taking Indian kids and going there. And it is a huge deal. Like, I mean, initially we all thought it was a trial, but even if it's just a week of coaching, I think it's really impressive and it'll do wonders for their career and probably that academy's future as well. They can use this to get the best kids in India and probably train them really well. So I think it's a really good step.
Right, DJ, have to agree with you. And like you said earlier, we haven't really seen a lot of other football clubs do this in countries like India. It's going to be a great platform and a good future for any young developing talent football in India. But staying now with Liverpool, and Neil, thank you for bringing this up because I think it's brilliant that, you know, it creates awareness about how deeply involved Liverpool is in its academies that it sets up in other countries. DJ, staying with you, who are the players, and staying with Liverpool, who are the players that you want to focus on right now?
I want to say how impressive Emre Can has been. Wow, the guy has, he's become incredible since Klopp. I think Klopp has done a lot of good things for a lot of players, but I think especially with Can, he's like totally redefined his role and really simplified it. And just, you know, and you know, there's a time between where Emre Can would say like, I'm the best midfielder in Liverpool. And yeah, he probably, you know, maybe in terms of raw skill, he probably was. He could do a bit of everything. But now Klopp has really focused his energies into maybe say two things and just say like, you know, do those two things well. And Sean has really delivered. And I mean, his fitness level is now through the roof. I mean, when he joined initially, I felt he was not very fit. He looked like he was struggling through games. But I mean, this season, he looks like he's lost a lot of weight. And I think it's more so even after Klopp took over. So I think Sean has really improved miles and I'm really, really impressed by him. And he's such a talker. Him and Henderson I feel like Henderson and him are like a pair. I can't really talk about Sean without talking about Henderson, but both of them just keep talking. They run the midfield. It's really impressive to watch. It was kind of disappointing before, but now they really seem to have the act together. And I think it's a really physical force, and I'm really excited to see where I can actually go if Henderson's foot is all right. So I think Emre Can is something I want to know your thoughts about, like how he's improved, how he's grown, like, you know, it's really impressive to me.
Yes, DJ. But do you think he is a little bit, I mean, this is my personal view, he's a little bit inconsistent and also tends to put the entire team in dangerous positions by giving the ball away quite frequently in midfield?
Honestly, I think when Henderson is with him, he is a young player. So he's really young. He's like, what, 20? He just turned 22 recently. So I'm okay with him giving the ball away a couple of times if it means he can do all the other things he does. His decision-making does need to improve. And like you said, his giving the ball away in midfield. But I still don't think it's that bad. Like, I feel like the way he's improving, like at the start of the season, although you could see Sean had all those raw skills, I could never like really say what his ceiling was. Like, it just felt like, yeah, this guy could be amazing, but sometimes his brain would just like stop working. But then now it just seems more focused. He seems there's a lot more clarity in the way he plays. And it's coming through. It's coming through in his game, and it's coming through in his confidence. I just don't know what his ceiling is anymore. And yeah, if he gives the ball away one or two times, it's because he's trying something. It's not because he's having a brain fart. And that way, I just feel like now I'm really, really excited for next season and the season after that. When this guy hits 24, I think he could be the best midfielder in the world. I mean, that's the way his potential is showing that kind of curve. And that's what I'm really excited about.
DJ, one quick question for you. Do you think he is captain potential for the future?
For sure. But the only thing is, I think Henderson and him are such a pair, and Henderson's not very old himself. But I think Emre, you don't really need to have the armband to be a captain. I think Carragher showed that plenty of times. It's just that Emre Can is such a talker, and he has absolutely no issues giving Benteke a rollicking in the Crystal Palace games when he didn't like really go into the position for the cross. And he has absolutely no problem with any of that because he's so confident in his own game. And he's just so impressive. Like, yeah, he's definitely a captain potential, but if he's not captain, it doesn't matter. It just means we have another winner and another leader in our squad. And slowly but steadily, a lot of our team, like, I never really thought this before, but a lot of players in our team are doing this more often. And maybe it's just because they needed time to adjust to how big a club LFC was. They're just getting comfortable with their own skin. Maybe it could be all of that, like Lallana showing a little bit of it. Coutinho always had a little, he's always been a big game player. Henderson has always been a talker, and now he's having a little more presence on the field. It's just a shame his foot is so bad. And then Sako and all these players, they're just slowly, I think they're just getting comfortable with the club. They're showing that they are good players. And even if they are inconsistent, which is, I think, par for the course, because they're all really young and it is a very young team. But I think it's slowly but surely like getting there. I think it just needs for us to get a trophy to really solidify in their minds that they are actually amazing players, and not just amazing players with potential. They're actually good players and they can do this consistently day in and day out. And I think that's what Klopp is slowly instilling, but not just him. The players are taking a little bit of responsibility as well.
Yes, it's a Klopp effect, baby. That's what it is. Meghna, you have something to add?
Yeah, talking about Can, I just really think that it's only been like the past 1 month or so that he's really found the consistency that, you know, like truly sees him as the central midfielder. And I love that he starts more. I mean, he wasn't available in the team as during Brendan Rodgers' time. And I think I always call him like the engine of the team for some reason. So yeah, I think he just gives a lot to the midfield, and I think he's just playing a more important role than, you know, centrally than Henderson or even Lucas or even, you know, Allen or even Milner. So it just shows how important Can has become to the team right now. And the fact that, you know, that penalty against City in the final, in the Capital One Cup final, and it was a brilliant penalty. And it just, yeah, I think, and the fact that he took it the first, it was like the first penalty, it's kind of awesome, and it just shows how important he is now to the team. So I definitely agree with everything DJ said, actually. Almost like 99% of what he said, I agree with that.
Right. Sri, moving on to you, is there any player that you want to talk about?
I think the player I want to talk about is someone who might not actually be there next season, but I hope he is, and my choice is Joe Allen.
I just had to say that I love you for bringing up Joe Allen. Continue, please.
Yeah, because I think it's kind of the Joe Allen we saw at Swansea and why we bought him. He's playing in a far more advanced role. And the point is, Klopp knows when to use Joe Allen. It's not like Joe Allen plays every time. There are specific situations and Joe Allen is brought up. I think the first leg of the Europa League game against United was perfect example. Van Gaal changed to a back three because they wanted to dominate the midfield because we were dominating them. And then he comes in and Joe Allen does what Joe Allen does best. He just kills the game. He gets the ball, passes the ball. He gets the ball, passes the ball, moves on. Gets the ball, shields the ball, passes the ball and moves on. He just killed the game. I think such talents are like very underappreciated according to me, because most times if you ask people about Joe Allen, what he passes sideways, he passes backwards. That is fair in certain things, but you must know when to use Joe Allen. I think with Klopp, the best thing is about how he's using Joe Allen, and we are seeing his attacking prowess. And I think from the moment he scored against Arsenal where we clinched the draw, I think Joel has been on a high. The only sad point being he's not been able to consistently stay fit, and I think that might be the hindrance actually if Klopp decides to keep him or not. But I think whenever he's fit, there's a clear-cut role, and his forward press, like, he's one of those players where you put him in the midfield but he'll press forward and immediately close the first line of the pass. So for me, Joe Allen is a player who has shown tremendous difference, because considering the fact that most other players who have shown improvement have been consistently playing. Now here is a guy who plays maybe 15 minutes, 20 minutes in a game and consistently has grown even in those few minutes. And for me, that's why I think Joe Allen has been the far outreaching player I've seen under Klopp.
Shree, just to understand your point of view, and just to understand, you know, why do you think Joe Allen is so underappreciated as a footballer? Because both you and I have been Joe Allen fans right from the beginning. But why do you think he is not looked at as someone who is contributing so much to the team? And basically, he's such a brilliant footballer. Why is that such an a misunderstood concept about him? Why do you think?
I think he does simple things well, and simple things are people expect that simple things are taken for granted. That's not the case. Football is ultimately, though you have so many aspects, so many tactics, so many stats, it's ultimately still, if you look down and break it into parts, it's still a simple game. You need to have the ball, you need to move the ball, get into position so that you would get the ball again. And that's what Joe Allen does best. It's just that he does the simple things well, and it's taken as for granted. I think that is why he's been underappreciated. But yes, clearly you don't need to be huge to dominate a game in midfield. And he is one of those prime examples where he can show with his intelligence he can dominate the ball. He knows when to receive the ball on a half turn. He knows when not to turn. He knows when to move ahead, when to drop deep. And he's one of those guys where Brendan Rodgers essentially bought him because of his ability to retain the ball even under pressure, even under closed zones. He is a guy who would find your man, even though when you are looking at the game via TV, you wouldn't think there is actually a passing option available. But Joe Allen will find the pass. And that's why I think Joe Allen is very much underappreciated, because he does the basic things well. And people take it for granted.
You hit the nail on the head, Shree. DJ, coming to you, you have something to add about Joe Allen?
I think, you know, since Klopp has come in, Allen has not really been given a fair shot, because he's impressed at every chance. I think there's a new level of aggression added to his game. I think it's partially because he's not really had a look in. And I think he's done really well. And especially against United, like, you know, she said, he won so many headers against Fellaini too. And Fellaini's just elbows, all elbows. And I mean, Allen has been really, really impressive. And he's so intelligent. And he literally wins the game back through his intelligence. It's very rare that a player can actually do that. But Allen can. The only problem is Klopp is so ruthless. I mean, he sees situations. And I think he and his team have such a good read on the emotional side of football, and just exactly know like how to like put which player at what time. I think that way he's amazing. But at the same time, I just can't see, like Shree said, Allen being there next season, unless Allen decides himself to have a role where he can actually impact any situation. Because Allen can really impact any situation. If you're going down one, if you're down in the game, he can come and wrestle control, be a little like
aggressive, start an attack. He's good at that. If you're leading in a game 2-0 and you want to kill it down, he can come in and he can do that. But it really depends if Alan is okay to settle for that role, because I don't know if he can actually go to a better club than Liverpool, but he can definitely offer more to a team if he's starting regularly. It's just that I don't know if he, the way he's playing now, is can he maintain it? He has physical issues. He gets injured. Every time he starts playing well, he gets an injury. And plus, he's not very tall, and Klopp seems to really like his tall players. I am an Alan fan. It's just that at the end of the day, when you really come down to it, you just want your midfielders to contribute more in terms of goals and assists. And I think he has shown that he can in this new role, in this new lease of aggressiveness. It's just that how can he sustain? Does Klopp see a future for him to start, which I personally don't think Klopp does. But, I mean, it's Alan. I think it depends on what Alan wants to do. If he can be a substitute that comes in at any situation, at any point in any game, and really put his mark on it, because he can really do that. I think Arsenal was a great example where he scored. And it's something that he's doing more often in this advanced role. So, yeah, I mean, I like him. I definitely like him more now than I used to like him before. But do I like him more because he's not starting every game and he's really showing that impact in 30 minutes? Or if he starts every game and does he still do this consistently? We don't know because we haven't seen that. And I don't know. I think maybe Klopp sees that in training and he sees that Alan's so intelligent and this is the right role for him. It's just whether Alan agrees to play that role or not.
I think with Alan, the point is he can definitely start at least in few of the clubs. There are a lot of clubs where he would be a definite starter week in, week out. But I think Klopp has identified a clear role. And the problem with such players is most players who don't play regularly will want to play regularly because they want to stay in the national team. That is one of the prime criteria is why they want to play regularly, so that they are in the conscious mind of the coaches who pick the national team. But I think with Wales, that's not a problem. Chris Coleman is definite to pick Alan whenever he's available. In fact, Alan is one of his first choices alongside Ramsey when he picks. So I think that part of the criteria is not a question. But as DJ said, maybe it's his personal wish, personal satisfaction to play week in, week out. And there are clubs who will definitely pick him. Even he goes back to Swansea, they'll be welcoming him. There are a lot of counter-attacking teams who could do someone with a controller like him. So there are options available. Now it's up to actually Alan. I don't think it's actually with Klopp. As DJ said rightly, it might be just the call of Alan, what he wants to do.
Well, for what it's worth, I think, and I really, really hope that Alan stays, because I think he's one of the most intelligent and brilliant footballers that we have. Meghna, coming to you, your player focus for today.
So I'm going to talk about Sako. Okay, what's not there to love about Sako? I absolutely love him, and I just really feel more confident of our defense every time he's playing. And especially my love for him intensified way more during the Capital One Cup final against City, when he head clashed with Chan, and he really didn't want to go. He didn't want to just be taken off, and he was arguing with Klopp, and he threw his bottle in anger and frustration, and but even when he was off, he had to be consoled. So that was some kind of passion, that was real passion. And we really need that kind of passion in the team. And I think it's also because of the passion that he'd also be a very good captain, since you were just talking about captains. Yeah, and thing with Sako is even though the whole aura around his personality is somewhat held by his unorthodox playing style, he always looks like he's just a second away from a horrendous error. But then he pulls through, and most of the time it turns into a very good performance. And recently, Joey Barton tweeted that, I don't know how many of y'all saw that, or I'm sure all of you read about that, but described him so perfectly. It was just so accurate. And he said he's the most unorthodox, efficient, unbalanced, and effective defender on the planet. So, and he also made that amazing analogy with him and the clown who, spins plates, and you think it's going to fall, but it doesn't, and that's how he performs. So yeah, I think, and his passing accuracy, oh my god, it's just something to mention. It's just so good. And apparently there was a stat that he's one of the top three defenders in Europe when it comes to passing accuracy. And this includes him in long passes. So yeah, what do you guys think about Sako and his passion for the team?
Yeah, Megs, I totally agree with you. Sako's just I think the problem with what happened recently when he came back from injury, he had three or four really poor games in a row, and everyone was doubting Sako again. But again, the last three games, he's just been incredible. I think that there is
something to do with his unorthodox style. I'm sure players see his stats. I'm sure opposition managers see his stats. And then they see him in real life and they go, no way, he's not going to make that pass. He looks so silly. How can he actually do it? And so many Liverpool fans still suffer from this image of Sako that he is exactly what everyone thinks of him, but he's absolutely not that player. If his only weakness is one thing, is that his defending in the air sometimes isn't very great, like in the box, I would say, like from a standstill position. If he has a running jump, he's winning it all day, every day. But if it's in the box and if it's a cross coming in, sometimes I'm still a little nervous when I see him inside the box. Like, I feel like even Mignolet has not really gotten used to his style, because a lot of times when he, Mignolet gets nervous when Sako's on the ball. So, I you know, while I can totally see why Liverpool fans love him, because he's so charismatic, he's such a, he's got such a force of will and personality, and he's got those eyes, and it's amazing. But at the end of the day, I think Sako is brilliant, and he's just 25. I think he has a lot more to offer, and more than this, his physicality and his passing. I think it's only a matter of time before he starts attacking balls in the other corner. It's something that he can add to his game. I think right now our best partnership is Lovren and Sako. So it's good to know that we have some options for the future, and it's good to know we have a ball playing centre back and someone who's so comfortable. You know, he actually puts in pinpoint through passes from the back. And that just cuts so many lines across the opposition's game. And it's and I love the fact that despite the fact that sometimes he can make mistakes, I'm so happy that he's always willing to chest it down and look for a pass and just boom it away and head it away. So I'm okay if a mistake happens every time in a season, once or twice, if he's willing to do that 98 times out of 100. So, I mean, I'm okay with that. So I think Sako has a lot more to go. I don't know how much he's improved on the club, but I just feel like he personally himself is just the kind of guy who always wants to improve. At least that's the way he comes across. So I think he's going to get better and better. So that's just my opinion of him.
Shri, I believe you have something to add to Sako.
Yeah, I think with Sako, it's kind of what we discussed with Alan. The point is, this guy also cannot seem to stay fit. And it's quite clear when he's fit and has had a run of games, his form is quite imperious. But he always, again, has a stop-start career at Liverpool. And I think that is the worry. When it comes to centre-backs, you would ideally want players who can consistently play every game, if possible, throughout the season, or at least the major league games. And maybe they get a rest in the cup games. But you would want a settled centre-back pairing. I think our defence will improve far better if we have a settled line in the back four and the keeper who play week in, week out. I think that will contribute hugely. And I think that is the only problem with Sako. In terms of his playing capabilities, there is no doubt. Though people have doubts, he has his own style and he's mastered his own style. So we cannot argue against it. Everybody plays according to their style. But the only problem seems to be his lack of consistency in playing games due to his fitness.
I just wanted to add that once Matip comes next season, do you think Sako will lose his place? Because I think Lovren is looking more solid under Klopp than any defender has been like in the past two or three seasons. So what do you guys think?
No, I don't know if like Matip is going to replace Sako. I think, is he a right-sided defender, Matip, if I'm not mistaken? But and I think Sako is very exclusively left-sided. I don't see if Lovren is really that. I think the problem with Lovren is, now, if he has just a decent performance, we tend to rate it over the top because we know how bad he can be. But yeah, Lovren's looking good. Sako's looking good. I think it's just good to have more good players. And I think that's what Matip adds. Because Matip is kind of prone to like some silly errors. But I think because of his height and physicality, he should be really good in the Premier League. And against especially those teams that play a lot of balls in the air. So I think Klopp could really go for like a horses for courses kind of approach and see which you know, against which team who could play, and I mean that would make a lot more sense to me than say like, yeah, Matip's gonna replace X, Y, Z, because I don't see it happening that way. I don't know if Matip is that good to just be a choice.
Shri, you wanted to add something about Matip.
Yeah, I think with Matip, he's again one of those guys who we rate about his intelligence. He's not blessed with great pace. Like, none of our defenders are blessed with great pace, but again, he's not known for his pace, but he's known for his intelligence. He gets into the right positions. He can cleanly take the ball with his interception skills rather than banking on his pace. I think he's a very good player to have. On a fee transfer, I think it's an absolute no-brainer for me. He'll certainly add to the squad. I think Klopp will like him because one, his one of his biggest strength is something which we have lacked this season. That is his ability to score from offensive set pieces. So that is something which we have lacked, and this guy is solid in that. At least in the last 18 months, he's been very good in attacking set pieces, and he's a good guy, and he's also versatile. He could play as a DM if you want to force fit someone there. He's also an option there. He could play a right centre back where we put Lovren on the left, or we could play Sako and Matip. There are options. I think options are welcome, but in a centre back position, ideally, as I said before, we would like a settled pair.
Right. Guys, we are going into a short break. And we will be right back.
You're listening to
the Anfield Index podcast channel.
The Anfield Index podcast channel.
Welcome back to the Indian podcast. We are actually running out of time, but let's quickly just cover a very, very interesting article that the Swiss Ramble Blogspot put across very recently. It talks about Liverpool's current financial situation and the importance of a business model versus a winning model. What it says, just to give everyone a quick head start into this whole issue, is that the club is in quite a healthy financial situation, operating in a sustainable manner, while other footballing costs have generally increased. According to the 2014 and 15 accounts, Liverpool has a £60 million profit, which is by far the highest of the 14 other Premier League clubs that have published their accounts for the same season. DJ, I'm going to start with you. What is your whole take on how FSG have managed Liverpool's financial position?
Yeah, so Dash, I think it's just important to caveat that the accounts, the huge profit that's shown in accounts is really offset by the sale of Suarez. So I think even Ian and I mentioned this, and I think the real profit would be somewhere close to 3 million, if I'm not mistaken. I think what the figures really indicate is that the club is financially stable and it's making money, and with the new TV deal coming in, things are just looking rosier and better. And we may all have critics, and Ian has fucked up in a lot of ways, but he is leaving in 2017. But I think credit where credit's due, the club has really turned I still feel we could do a lot better, but I think in the what is really key to know is that we have come out of a loss-making period and now we're slowly starting to make profit, more like break-even, I would say. And I think we're slowly heading towards the black, and that's really good news. But the other really key indicator for me is that we are literally fifth in all the income sources. Like if you compare to other clubs, if you look at match day revenue, if you look at the wage bill, if you look at commercial income, all of those things, if you look at, we are literally fifth in all the places. And if you go by what Tompkins says, and generally what all financial accounts and sports say, is that whoever spends the most generally ends up winning the most. And I mean, and what FSG have banked on is getting a world-class manager, but is that really a winning argument next season? Because you have Guardiola, you have probably Mourinho at Man United, you have Conte at Chelsea, you will have Arsene Wenger at Arsenal, and you'll have Pochettino at Spurs, and all these managers, you could at least put on a really high level. Is that good enough to get us to where we want to go? I mean, that's a question that these accounts can't really answer, because that's a strategy decision. And this is history.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, one of the main things that stood out for me while reading that article was how they talk about what FSG want to do as a strategy, like you said, DJ, from a business model versus a winning model. In the sense that a business model is what we have been doing, getting in young players, developing them, building them, and then selling them for a much higher fee. And a winning model is basically spending on a proven world-class player without really paying much attention to the financial part of it or it being a future investment. So coming to you, Neil, what do you think our strategy should be from here on?
Firstly, I'd like to point out, I think the major thing which surprised me the most was how high our EBITDA is, which is earnings before interest, taxes and depreciation and amortization, which accounted to up to 72.8 million, which rose by 19.6 million, which I think I was very surprised by that. I mean, of course, there were the sale of Suarez, but I didn't expect it to be so high. The other thing which I'd like to point out is that in the last year, I think FSG has converted about 69 million of debt into equity, which shows that they are in it for the long term. And it's important for the club's long term stability. I think converting those debts into equity is very important. And then further investing 49 million into the stadium, which will straight go into the profits, which is very important. Also, the revenue as such has risen up to 17%, which is pretty impressive. And I think the club is going in the right direction. Of course, there were a lot of money from Suarez's sale. I think Liverpool's 60 million profit is, I think, highest between the 14 clubs who have, published their 2014 and 15 accounts. And this is the second year in succession that Liverpool have reported profit following 5 years of losses. I think 2008-2013 was completely, we've shown losses. So this is, I think, the second year in succession that we've shown profit, which shows that, over time and, the clubs had patience and, over time, the FSG are doing the right thing and bringing in the right people and, especially commercially, getting in all the big deals with Skype, Subway, Garuda. So there's a lot of credit to Ian Eyre and the whole commercial and the partnership team with bringing in a lot of commercial revenue. So I think this is very important for the club in the coming future.
Shree, coming to you, it does look like we are moving in the right direction. But do you think, from a strategy point of view, there's something that any aspect of the financial situation that FSG needs to work on?
I think one thing we need to accept is considering our on-field performance and our off-field, how the numbers are stacking up year on year, has no resemblance. Ideally, usually you say your off-field is dependent on how you perform on the field or vice versa, some cases. But here there seems to be no correlation. The brand is still huge globally. And the importance of the global fans shouldn't be underestimated. And this is another example. The numbers we are able to pull off in terms of merchandise, in terms of commercial revenue, in terms of sponsorship is still huge. The brand is being played to the maximum extent. So I think that is to be accepted in that part. But in terms of strategy, I think one thing we need to look at is there's a factor called as player amortization we are looking at. And this number is going to be keeping on growing if you continue buying lots of players. Because what you do is amortization is if you buy a player, let's say for 25 million and you give him a 5-year contract, you're going to split the value of the player across the 5-year period. So you're going to reduce his value by 5 million, 5 million, 5 million, so that at the end of the 5 years in market value, he's a free transfer, but in your books of accounts also, he's actually worth 0 million because you have used up throughout his whole contract. So the player amortization value is going to work on that, and our player amortization has tended to be high comparatively with respect to Liverpool's previous accounts because we are under Rodgers, every season we have tended to buy 8 players, 9 players. So there's huge influx of players every season. So this number is going to stay high. And again, this season we have bought Firmino, we have bought Benteke. Those two alone are 60 million. Obviously, teams like United under Van Gaal, they have kept buying players at huge value. So when they write off in the first year on a straight line depreciation method, it's going to be again high. So those clubs are far more high. But I think under Klopp, the strategy now might be that we reinforce key positions with quality players. So I think it's high time we stop buying 8 players every winter. Though Klopp actually did that under Dortmund, but I think he sold some 15 players and bought 10, 11 players. I'm not sure whether that is the way forward. At least in terms of these accounting terms, this amortization is one fact. But in terms of an on-field football strategy, I don't think that is the right way forward. Maybe 1 year is an excuse, but we keep doing that excuse for every new manager we appoint. Every 3 years, we write off the first window saying, yeah, he needs to bin off every place. And I think this is where it is absolutely imperative that you get a director of football and we have a clear blueprint of how we are going to approach our footballing model right across the age groups, right from your under-age to the senior team.
Absolutely, Shree. And I think getting on to European football is also extremely important for us to be continue being sustainable on a financial basis. And now moving from finances and the technical stuff to something a little more fun, I want to know what so far have been your favorite Jurgen Klopp moments. We're going to start with you, Megs, because we know you're such a huge fan of Jurgen Klopp. So what has been your favorite moment so far?
Everything. Almost everything has been my favorite part. But I think the one that stands out is obviously celebration when Liverpool played Norwich and after Lallana scored and he ran. He just ran and, you know, calling Lallana towards him and, you know, that whole team huddled after that. And also I love how Benteke broke his glasses. And later in that post-match presentation, he said that, you know, I can't look for my new glasses because I don't have my glasses now. So he's just, he has this fabulous humor, which always is a lot of fun to listen to. And then, of course, his insane passionate celebration of all the goals against Arsenal. And especially that one, I think it was the third goal, where he just ran down the side, but it was raining. So it was really dramatic, you know, him running down that hole in the rain on the side and, you know, jumping up and celebrating thrice. And it's just hard not to have every, like one particular or two particular favorite moments, because everything he does is just, for me, it's epic. So, and then, you know, that, after we won against City recently, 3-0, and the person who was interviewing him asked him, 4-1 was good, but then what do you think about 3-0? And he just replied with boom, you know. And then his surprise reaction over Lallana's goal in the same match was all kind of epic. And yeah, just one of those very few moments of mine which I remember all the time. So these are the ones that stand out, basically. Otherwise, I love everything he does.
What's there not to love about Jurgen Klopp? Neil, coming to you, your favorite moment.
Again, I think everything has been like so amazing about him since the time he came and how excited we were, you know, people just waiting for him and following him on the streets. But my personal favorite would be, because I watched a lot of Bundesliga when, you know, when he was managing Dortmund, I loved the fact that what he did after the West Brom game, where all he, you know, brought all the players together and all of the players, you know, held hands and, you know, appreciated the cup with, you know, the brilliant gesture after the game, you know, where they all raised their hands. I think that was brilliant, because I see that happening very often in the Bundesliga, you know, all the players and the manager come together to appreciate the fans. And I think this was brilliant that it happened. You know, it hasn't happened again, but I think, I mean, I know there was a lot of criticism just because it was a draw, but I think it was important for the players and the fans, you know, because all the fans came together in the dying moments and, you know, the crowd supported the team. And that's why I think the players and the manager did that, to appreciate the fans. And I think that should happen more. And maybe we can see it happen again. So I think that would be my favorite club moment. And I hope to see that again very soon.
DJ, your turn.
Yeah, I think the only thing I missed out about the whole Klopp thing is, like, after we lost the cup finals against City, Klopp just said something like, you know, it would be stupid for us. We can lie down today and cry about it, but it'd be stupid for us to cry about it forever. We're going to stand up and we're going to fight again. And, you know, that just felt like my father, like, picking me up after a bad day. Like, it just felt like that. That's how it felt to me. And I can only imagine how it must have felt for the players. It felt like he gave us a big collective cuddle. And I just felt like so much better after he said that. And I don't know what it is about him. He's so primal. And he's so passionate that, you know, it just feels unreal. It just doesn't feel professional in many ways. It just feels it feels amazing to see someone like that. So, yeah, I think that just those words. And I think, you know, something that he himself mentioned, when he speaks in German, it's like listening to a waterfall. But I think his words have profound impact on in English as well. And I think it's slowly starting to seep into the way I perceive him, because he has a lot of work to do. I genuinely feel like, although there's been a lot of improvements in terms of fitness and in terms of resilience and character and mentality, in terms of actual play and winning points, I think he still has a lot of work to do. But I'm so optimistic, because it's Klopp, and I really feel like he knows what he's doing, and it's, and I just feel optimistic because it's him, and he's not just a snake oil salesman. He's actually doing the work behind the scenes. So I'm really glad. Apart from that, I just love the way he celebrates and just the passion. It's just incredible. It's so primal. It's amazing watching him. He's so captivating. Like, half the time you know, on TV, they have the little square boxes where they just show Klopp. And I think that's sometimes way more interesting than the way Liverpool play.
Isn't it just amazing how we've moved on 6 months from what we were before and how we are now, and how much we love the manager that we have? It's the most beautiful thing about Klopp is that this Liverpool team plays for him. They want to play for him. It's just amazing. Sri, coming to you, your favorite moment.
I think I have a couple of moments which actually talk about the man, not about the manager. I think the two moments I would think is, there was one interview where there was this lady interviewing him, and he's so aware of his surroundings, he's so aware of the people around him, he puts a small stool for her so that she doesn't look short and she can interview him comfortably. So I think that was one moment for me. And the other moment was when Sako was injured. As a manager in the cup final with such a scenario, no manager offers an explanation, but here was this guy actually talking to his player, actually apologizing. There were clearly 3-4 times that he said, sorry, but I have to do it. Nowadays, there is so much debate about concussion and head injuries in the Premier League. And we have had managers actually going bonkers because we have had doctors coming onto the field where they didn't like it. But here was the man who was actually prioritizing the welfare of his player in a cup final against a team which he has already won in the league, and it's a cup, first cup he could have won in his first season, which was not with a team which was gifted to him. It was not his own team. There are so many scenarios in favor of Klopp. He could have actually maybe just got one, is made the player stay. And even if he got him off, there was no explanation needed. But here was this guy trying to make the player understand his decision. And I think players appreciate that. You talk to them, give them a reason rather than say, hey, you played well, you didn't play well, you played well, you did. Just then, like a Russian roulette, instead of avoiding that, if you actually give them reasoning, I think the players will understand and will want to play for you. I think these two scenarios actually tell us more about the human being that Klopp is, rather than as a footballing manager, as a tactician, anything. More than that, he's a great human being for me.
And his hugs. I mean, for me, that's like the best thing about Klopp. Just his hugs. His hugs, it just sums up everything that the man is. For me, one of the best moments so far was post the Aston Villa game when we won 6-0, and he said that this is not the time for us to sing songs because it's Aston Villa, a very respectable club that is going down. So I think that, again, spoke off a lot about his character. Yes. But guys, that's the best thing about Klopp, right? I mean, we asked for like one or two moments and we just could not stop talking about him. And it's true. I have to pinch myself even now just to think about the fact that we have Jurgen Klopp. He is our manager. Come on. Okay, guys. So we have reached the end of our pod. Thank you always for being a part of it. It's always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks to all the listeners for tuning in. And before we say goodbye, do give a listen to the AI Analytics pod that covers goalkeeping, as well as the Deuce Bags pod, which is hosted by our very own Shri. It talks about the Maria Sharapova doping incident. And all of this available on the AI channel app, which, by the way, is now available on Android. So all you Android users out there, don't forget to download it in case you haven't already. Thanks again, everyone. See you. Good night. Podcast Network.